Welcome back. We're at episode 346, I believe. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Well, this week, a couple items. I think if we get on our primary talk, if we don't get sometimes you have a primary talk, we don't get to
We
it.
do.
But we'll
Very
try to.
often that happens,
We'll try to leave the audience in suspense. The two or three.
It's our unique style of it just being a conversation without any,
Yes.
kind of oversight. But we do our best to stay focused, but sometimes that fails.
So my dozens of listeners, okay, keep them in suspense. But it trickle it has effect as those 12 people talk to 12 people and those 12 people talk to 12
That's right.
people. Let's see. Okay. Yes, I do the show at a loss, but at a gain too, I guess. For me, it's therapy. One part therapy, one part vanity, and I guess whatever. Let's see. Oh yeah, this week. You see the story? You're familiar with Sheetz? I don't know if you have them on the West Coast. Are they on the West Coast?
No.
Okay. Well, they're regional. I think Mid-Atlantic, Eastern Seaboard operation. Stores are pretty good. I have one near my house actually, and I've always been impressed with the people that work there. These particularly the younger people that work there. I do remember them advertising 10 years ago, offering like $16 starting. And $30 if you're a manager. This was maybe 2015, so it was a pretty good starting wage. This entry for an entry level position. You can go there, get pretty good stuff, coffee, gasoline, and that sort of thing. They're competitive with the gas price and all that. So it's one of these regional outfits. Now, apparently, despite all that, the Sheetz convenience store is now being accused of discriminating against minority job applicants. Because of they do background checks for particularly for criminal records, and apparently this disproportionately affects people of color, because people of color, particularly black male applicants, have much higher rates of having criminal records, so they don't get hired. Now, the Biden administration, by the way, the same day the Biden administration announced this lawsuit against Sheetz, Biden visited a Sheetz convenience store. I don't know if someone's playing a joke on him or something. Nevertheless, the public convenience store has been hit with a civil rights lawsuit accusing of discriminating against minority job seekers because it requires applicants to have no criminal record. Now, think about that for a second, Joe. Cogitate on that.
I will.
Okay, you've thought about it?
Yes, I
Is
have.
that reasonable for an employer to discriminate against people with criminal records?
Yes, it is.
Is it Sheetz's fault that blacks have higher rates of having criminal records?
Yes.
Okay. So you must work for the Justice Department,
I
Office
do.
of Civil Rights,
Rest ever.
and the Office of Employment Opportunity, and the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, because these one of these specious lawsuits. Again, this could be a shakedown operation, but then it's going to court. Now, in the past, about other lawsuits I've read up on it have been thrown out of court. Judges, now I don't know if that happened this time because the judiciary is degraded to a point where common sense doesn't apply. But this is a doctrine. This is a product of doctrine of disparate impact, which grew out of the 1971 Duke Power Company decision. And Duke Power Company, I believe, had a test that was race neutral, but it was a cognitive test or something, and they found that it disproportionately discriminated against, if you use that term, against black applicants. Black scored lower. So again, there are bona fide reasons to discriminate. I remember. Back early 90s, this is one of these cases I ever had a laugh at it, that the Office of Civil Rights Division, the EEOC, was suing Hooters for discriminating against men.
Right.
Now they found that Hooters, it's a crass operation. Nevertheless, that they have a reason that they want to hire women of a particular appearance or have certain attributes as part of their business model, and the lawsuit was dropped. Here again, this is again basically what they're saying. Disparate impact pretty much says that for whatever reason there's inequality, an employer is liable for it. Because remember, it has although the standards or the test or whatever you're holding the applicant up to is racially neutral, has a disproportionate effect. Okay, but why is that the fault of the employer?
Right, and it's not, of course, and the logic of the thing is kind of peculiar in that they're seemingly making the assertion that if they're are any differences in criminality between the ethnicities, then you cannot use criminality as a standard for employment, past criminality.
Yeah.
And that's the only way you can interpret this. And so, well, why not? Why is past criminality being, you know, taken away from the rights of the employer to judge the, you know, the applicant? If to back up, I mean, all of this has to do with the destruction of ethnicity. You know, I mean, really, that's what this is ultimately about. They can't achieve any kind of anything near equality in terms of outcome, right? So they can create laws that prohibit outcomes from being meaningful.
So their idea is to kind of create a Procrustean bed, cut everything to size.
Ultimately, this goes to the lowest common denominator as far as, like, you know, the workplace. But it also has, you know, ultimately as its motivation, the idea of getting rid of all ethnicities, because, you know, in the milieu that they're creating, you can have, you know, all the race intermarriage and interbreeding you want. You know, that's something that's obviously promoted.
Mm-hmm.
And then when, you know, you come toward the workplace, then that motivation or that perspective is reflected. You know, you get to have, like, criminal past, and you're going to be hired in the same rate as someone who is an A student in high school with no criminal past. And so it's all just this one clump heading toward the lowest common denominator. Now, that would be hard to justify under any circumstances, right? Because the meritocracy always has had advantages, obviously. And to claim it doesn't is just ridiculous. So to get rid of that, you would have to be arguing that, well, we're going to make a better society in some way. But we can already see now that that's just ridiculous, right? You can see that in the inner cities, where the multicultural programs have been the most intense, that you're not heading toward a workers' paradise. You know, where you're heading toward is the abyss. When you take meritocracy out of the equation, then the laws that support it, you know, like, if you can afford to live in a nice place, you know, the nice place will, you know, it will stay in existence. It's motivating. But then when you have no laws to be able to remove the fentanyl brigade from your sidewalk, right? Mm-hmm. And it all just spins down, and so when I look at you know, the laws that are prohibiting employers from, basically, these are laws that have to do with race, right? I mean,
yeah, that's
what it's about. They're just a way of creating an artificial integration, which will not work. I mean, it in the sense of having some kind of sustainable culture that, you know, produces a good lifestyle.
Well, integration presumes the only differences of skin color. Obviously, there's much more differences than that. One is namely behavior, violent behavior, criminal behavior, temperament. Right. These things are very complex, and they determine how people relate and can organize and cooperate with one another, which creates a very, inevitably you create a very an unworkable and impractical and hostile work environment by forcing people together like this, and without any consideration for standards of behavior, or productivity, you know, performance, you know.
Right. And, you know, we talked like a few shows ago about the cover for all of these laws were based on the idea that, well, ethnicity is artificial. The out of Africa theory indicates, you know, look, we're all 99% the same DNA.
Yeah.
So there's really no difference. And if there is difference in outcome, it's the difference has to be the environment. Now, even at that time, I think if you looked at the politicians that were producing this, really they weren't trying, they didn't love dark-skinned people. They just hated Europeans, I think. This is really the real motivation.
Yeah, well, who is behind it? Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
But beside all that, the argument that they were giving is just factually incorrect, because now that you have the human genome mapped, and now that DNA analysis can be so precise, you can see that Europeans and Asians share between like 3 and 7% of Neanderthal DNA, which does not exist in sub-Saharan Africa. So there is not this 99% similarity. Many of the Neanderthal genes that have been adopted by Cro-Magnon, that modern European, are brain active. So you're not talking about even kind of the same brain in that kind of 99% precision. But then in the last 2 years, the incredible discovery of the fact that 11% of West Africans and sub-Saharan Africans have 11% of their DNA comes from this archaic hominid, Homo erectus. And this is just obviously, it's not apples with apples anymore. I mean, the two groups can inbreed. They share enough commonality to be able to produce an offspring, but that does not mean they have 99% similar genetic events.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can go back to genetic history and all that. And
my point is that why isn't this an issue? Why don't they go, okay, well, we were wrong. Let's review some of these based on the 99% idea.
Yeah, you can have this thousands of years of human development. Then you also have everyday observation. It's like, oh, okay, I know what I see and what everyone else sees. Why are we telling you all these lies? The fact is, this lawsuit, however absurd it is, fits well within the logic of existing civil rights law and the standards, as I mentioned, disparate impact. So the problem is the law. The Biden administration is actually arguing that she's just not guilty of discrimination, but nevertheless, it's outside the law. So then, what is it? It's like a Kafkaesque, or, it's you damage you, damage you don't. And this is where our civil rights has just become a cottage industry, a constant lawsuit and litigation and shakedown and intimidation and these things. And it undercuts. I think it was codified in law in 1991, which is really, civil rights law was actually disparate. It was codified into law. It was a product of judicial rulings, like meant the Duke Power Company decision in 1971. But 20 years later, although it's self-contradictory and absurd, it was codified into law. The Griggs versus Duke Power, codifying Griggs versus Duke Power Company, 1991. So these things are just set up for constant litigation, and this is what the law is now. It's just annoyance, litigation, expense. Ignoring, of course, the obvious problems of black criminality, black pathology, as if that does factor into black employment and gain. And like I said, to what extent there are differences, I believe there are differences that are going to manifest themselves no matter what you do, whatever social engineering laws you pass. All that being said, if there's going to be any material advancement among people of color, if you will, advancing in our society is what the civil rights law was supposedly to give them full access to the American dream, if you will. That's how it was sold to the white majority. You're going to have to maintain standards. If you don't maintain standards, that cohort among that minority group who does have the talent and the ability, there's going to be a lot less of them doing that, because then there's going to be less incentive to rise to the occasion. And I take the position that there's legitimate inequality and there's illegitimate inequality. If you're going to have a free society, you're always going to have some inequality, because people are different within groups, and groups are different, and there's going to be different levels of performance. And the Jews argue about this all the time, how they're higher verbal IQ, they're higher intelligence, they're higher work ethic. We can see with Asians has manifest real material differences. Well, Hakua doesn't apply when you juxtapose, the white population versus the blacks. Oh, no, all of a sudden now, that's prima facie evidence of discrimination, racism, of white supremacy. That's the contradiction here. So,
well said. The lack of standards, that, in other words, instead of trying to find ways to promote black achievement, black intellectual progress, you give them the cult of self-esteem, and a pseudo history which explains their plight based on racism. Mm-hmm. You see, so this is why like in that show we did, I thought that was really important to point out that we have to make widespread the understanding that there is now, it's not some kind of bogus racist theory. I mean, this is just absolutely hard science. There's enormous differences between the ethnicities, and certainly they are responsible for some of the gap.
Yeah.
So if we're going to address the gap, you have to address the honest reason for the gap. What we've done is we give them the cult of self-esteem, affirmative action, and also kind of this explanation for the plight, the difference, that there was this racism applied against them. And what this does, particularly in the context of no standards, it just produces nihilism. And I would say, if you look at the attorneys, for example, that are going after Trump, and they're black, three black attorneys, Bragg, Latoya James, and Fannie Willis, they're really nihilists. In other words, they don't seem to have any kind of really honest explanation for the bogus charges they're bringing. And when they are, kind of criticized and asked for explanation, they go to, in my opinion, what I hear them saying is that, well, we're just doing the same thing to Trump, the, representation of the white male that they did to us when we were lynched. And so it doesn't really matter, to what extent the laws are being followed, or if, we are really just paying them back. So what they've led the kind of the black managerial and legal class into is nihilism, where they just are their kind of the false history and the idea that racism is the God, it explains everything.
Yeah, that's the focal point. That's the lodestar.
It just has led them to having the people in their ethnicity that are in these positions. They don't represent any kind of moral progress. They're just taking their place and reversing the role of the people. Now we're doing
Well,
the lynch.
they're tribal and very venal. They're tribal and very venal, and there's no, not even a pretense of maintaining any professionalism or objectivity. And that's a product of tribal politics that you get
It was
into.
amazing when Fannie Willis was being interrogated or deposed, I think it would be. She was on they brought her in that legal process. And she was caught lying. She was caught using the revenue of the state for swag and stuff. And I honestly didn't see any contrition. I didn't see any even confusion, because I thought, well, this is just a petty nihilist. She just feels that, yeah, I'm doing wrong, but it's okay because I'm doing it to a white guy.
Yeah, it's inability to entertain or think about sort of abstract or principled. It's like me, gimme, 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 me. I do what's right for me.
Yeah, it just makes them so selfish and nihilistic. And of course, even this, if this was leading, the African American to a better world, I mean, at least you could argue, well, what the heck, they've had it rough, even though it's intellectually and morally incoherent, at least it's getting them to a better place. It's not. You look at the academic outcomes in public schools, they're worse than ever. And you look at violence, it's going up, out of wedlock. There's all the demographics
Well,
are
there's
just
only
in.
so many sinecures you can offer mediocre or incompetent black officials. The vast majority of blacks are going to suffer. And a good example would be South Africa, where they could just inherit the white man's world and everything would be fine. It would just decay because no one has the capacity to maintain it. And it just descends into brutal tribal politics. Even in the heyday of apartheid, most of the violence was inter-black. It was tribe versus tribe. It was the apartheid regime that was maintaining order. But that's a whole nother issue. So yeah, just more nonsense here. Did you of course this house, the Senate and the House passed yet another aid package, they call it, to prolong the money laundering and depopulation operation in Ukraine. I think $61 billion went there, or 60 billion, whatever. Another $26 billion to help the Israelis ethnically cleanse the Palestinians and whatever crimes. And then total, and then I think $9 billion went for aid to Palestine, which I think is going to be handled by the Israelis. So where do you think that's going to? Because the U.S. Doesn't work with the United States Relief Organization anymore, because the Israelis claimed they were involved supporting Hamas. And of course, this aid package coincides with all this outbreak of protests. I think on over 30 campuses across the country, you have these tent encampments protesting the Israelis, and this has been construed as anti-Semitism because apparently it's anti-Semitic to equate Jews with Israel, but it's also anti-Semitic to criticize Israel, and it's anti-Semitic to point out the contradiction of the first two propositions. In Texas, Governor Abbott, I think, called out snipers to protect Jewish students on campus. I don't think there is one report or general report of one Jewish student being assaulted or hurt. Nevertheless, we're Benjamin Netanyahu equated these protests to Nuremberg rallies, of course, invoking the Holocaust.
When I heard about the snipers, I just laughed. I was just thinking about, well, exactly what would they be sniping? You know, I mean, they'd be sitting in their little crow's nest on top of the buildings and looking for anti-Semitic behavior.
Yes.
How would they even know what was going on?
Speaker Johnson, I think, spoke at Columbia.
That are like, do they have like badges on them or something?
Well, I know. Who would they know who to shoot?
Yeah.
They're claiming that Jews are being prevented from going to class. That's not true. They're claiming, again, all types of claims from the ADL. Take that for what that's worth. But basically, they're equating protests to violence and having to confront people protesting what's going on in Israel. Now, take a step back. This is the United States. The conflict is between Palestinians and Israelis and Jews. Why is the United States involved in it? Why are there protests at U.S. campus events? Well, because U.S. government has been completely suborned and co-opted by the Jewish lobby. And that's why the U.S. is involved in the middle of this thing. And they have various governors passing or signing blatantly unconstitutional laws to protect the sensibilities or feelings of Jews in violation of the First Amendment, suppressing what is, by definition, a political speech. They're grossly over-exaggerating the levels of violence or physical threats on these campuses. What they're saying is, if you're a Jew and you have to confront people protesting Israel and calling out Jews for the crimes of the state they support, that's akin to anti-Semitism, basically. Governor Abbott actually said that anti-Semitism is a crime. It's not a crime. First of all, you have to define what it is. Anti-Semitism is criticism of Jews, dislike of Jews. Maybe there's reasons to dislike Jews, but anti-Semitism is not a crime. But in effect, what they're doing is they're in effect passing hate speech laws, speech codes, which is unconstitutional, all for the interest of the Jewish lobby. And it's Mike Johnson actually went up there at Columbia and repeated a lie about 40 beheaded babies and rapes and all that before there's no evidence.
It was incredible. All of that has been debunked.
Yes.
And he rolled it out as effective propaganda.
Yeah. So again,
I was just going to say that. So you get this kind of domination of like, the population of their mind through the all of these anti-Semitic, laws that are, intimidating them. I mean, really, what is going on with the legal system is very similar to what's gone on with the algorithms in Google. If you type in something like
it's like that.
Use did 911 or something like that. I did this a while ago as an experiment, and you get like 30 pages, and the top one would be from the ADL, and then the next one would be from the American Jewish Committee. I mean, you just get so. Yeah. So what they've done is with their algorithms is they are basically just only permitting one kind of consciousness, and it doesn't matter to what extent it connects to reality at all. It doesn't matter at all. So they're really attempting a very broad based propaganda control over the minds of the Gentiles. Really, yeah. That's, I would say, the honest description of
it. And it's also generation within this bill is also they passed that TikTok.
Yeah.
Where apparently they're going to force sell TikTok. Because TikTok is a platform which isn't doesn't police anti-Semitism enough, but they're claiming it was sort of a Chinese anti-Chinese thing. Because their theory is China's undermining the United States through TikTok. Well, no, believe me, United States doesn't need any help in that regard. You're going to talk about media, poisonous media, and corrupting the minds of the youth, and you think the Chinese are doing that? Really?
Right.
And then, of course, when you're talking about the forced sale of TikTok, we had a few weeks ago where Mnuchin, the former Secretary of the Treasury, admitted that he was getting together a consortium of Jewish investors. He didn't say Jewish, but they are Jewish, to buy up TikTok the moment it has to sell the platform. Now, I imagine if this law does indeed get signed, there's going to be a lot of lawsuits. So I don't think it will happen soon because it's blatantly unconstitutional. Also, setting a precedent where if someone's attached to a foreign media entity or a platform, they're assuming that you're like being mind controlled by a foreign interest. Ironically, of course, the most influential foreign interest in the United States is Israel and the Jewish lobby and the Israeli lobby, but no one talks about that. You know.
Yeah, I mean, it's so it's the propaganda.
Or no one in the political class. I'm sorry, we're talking about it.
is everywhere, the only good news here is that there is just greater and greater awareness of the fact that it is an ethnic attack that is coming out of the program that was described in the authoritarian personality, where all of the kind of ability of the Gentiles to have any sort of psychological or ethnic power are defined as neurotic. And so in that era, that you could get away with that absurd claim. But now they're making it basically legal and to take that position. And at the same time, they are sort of insisting on that they have now kind of unique powers to use law to attack, even though we have been taken the ability to use law to defend ourselves ethnically has been removed from us, right?
The neutrality of the law is being
right. You can't say, well, I'm sorry, you're a young black male and you've had three murder convictions and I just don't want you in my business. I'm not going to hire you. That has been taken away, but I mean, you probably saw Dershowitz's, a statement in that one interview you did where...
Oh, lawfare. Yeah. I mean, lawfare.
I'm just going to use the law to attack anyone who is even under any definition that I can come up with anti-Semitic. Now, compare Dershowitz's use of the law here with the owner of one of the franchises who is trying to, have the best employees, right?
Yeah.
Incredible. On one hand, you have no ethnic power whatsoever. It just doesn't exist. You are mandated into this a world where you can't even see anything that is ethnic. That's all been taken away from you. And Dershowitz is coming out and saying, anyone who does anything that I think is remotely anti-Semitic, we're just going to use the law to destroy.
Yeah, it's very tribal, unprincipled. And also, I have that. Let me play that. And this is lawfare. And of course, we can talk about lawfare itself. Particularly, there's also Jewish lawfare. But again, the breakdown of the law is in the tribal interest, then Jewish, then blacks. We see that with the lawfare, where as the profession, as the judiciary and the legal profession has become more diverse and more Jewish, it's become more, predatorial or aggressive or unneutral. Here we go. I'll play this. This is maybe you can hear this. I'll play this.
I'm constantly attacked for my Jewishness. You know a thing or two. Do you have any advice for what we can do?
I've suggested an organization getting 100 really good lawyers not to let a single person get away with a single anti-Semitic act because the police almost never prosecute. We'll sue them. We'll take away their car.
Oh, interesting, because the police won't prosecute. You're just going to go from legal repression.
Take away their car. Take away their apartment. Bankrupt them. Make them sleep on the street. I have no sympathy for an anti-Semitic.
But any opinion he doesn't like or things he doesn't like or criticism, because remember he says he's criticized for his Jewishness. What does that mean? You mean positions you take or the positions you take?
Criticizing you for using the law against Gentiles as an ethnic attack. I mean, it's a loop. Of course we're going to criticize.
He should be disbarred. Harvard should fire him.
Yes.
That because this is a violation of his oath to the Constitution. It's a violation of oath to the courts. You're weaponizing the law. You're abusing the law for an ethnic, tribal, political agenda. And you listen, at that point, you should not be allowed to be a lawyer. If the bar means anything, maintaining standards, that's why we put up. And also what he's doing is just he's destroying the legal system. Something like when you hear rhetoric like that, I have no faith in the legal system to do justice or to work out disputes equitably and fairly in accordance with the law.
Yeah, I mean, what if he actually did this and he sued someone and took their car away and their house away using clever tricks? And the only thing that the individual had done was just criticize Dershowitz in a general sense for having undemocratic, representing undemocratic levels of Jewish power.
Like hosting a website, like hosting a website and posting articles.
Something like that. Now,
if that would never happen, would it, Joe? I mean, would that would never happen in America? Would someone who just post, would they ever be sued and be bankrupted just before?
Wouldn't that be amazing? But the point is that okay? So now, what does this individual do that Dershowitz has sued into the gutter, right? Because as you're saying, this ends the whole the basis of like our democracy is that there is some kind of trust that there is in back of everything. It's not
how does he get justice?
Right. How does that individual get justice? Well, unfortunately, he wouldn't even think about using the legal system, right? So justice then becomes just what he can create with his own hands. This is the end of the justice system. Mm-hmm. And surprise, Dershowitz doesn't, he's not a moron. You'd think he would at least mention this, in that there is this kind of risk when you use the law this way that you're going to incite hysteria, because you've ended the whole belief that there's any sort of meaning to democracy and laws. If he can actually pull this off and just start suing people into the
well,
gutter.
He's a very vindictive person, and it gets the better of him. There was a debate he had, I think it was on Democracy Now! With Norman Finkelstein and with Amy Goodman, and she was moderating it. And Norman Finkelstein made mincemeat of him. Exposed him for his fraud in the books that he wrote. He was advocating terrorism at the time. I mean, advocating torture at the time. This is the aughts, about 20 years ago. And he went behind the scenes and got his tenure pulled, Norman Finkelstein. That was Alan Dershowitz that did that. And that's a fellow Jew. Norman Finkelstein, yeah. He's the one that wrote The Holocaust Industry. And he went after him on that. And he actually threatened to sue on the show. But the only problem is Norman Finkelstein could provide evidence for his accusations of plagiarism and also academic fraud. So he's very vindictive. Then he has chutzpah. He just kind of loses sense of limitation. So they forget themselves and they go too far. And there's the inevitable reaction. But this is a product of lawfare. Now, generally speaking, lawfare is the use of the legal system or institutions to damage or delegitimize an opponent or deter the individual's use of the legal of rights. Now, whether or not you call it lawfare or not, I guess it depends on what your perspective is. It also depends on, I would have to say, it depends on the merits of each case. There is some times when a person should be sued, or there's grounds for a lawsuit, despite even if they're political active, they've done something. There's been transgression. They've slandered you, that sort of thing. But a good example is the under existing rules, like the World Court, where someone's South Africa sues in the World Court against Israel. Some have referred to that as lawfare, but given the issue and given the facts of the case, the institutions that have been established to adjudicate these things. That's not a cynical abuse of that system. That's how the system is supposed to work in a way. And to call that lawfare is in the sense that you're abusing the system to achieve some political agenda. There's always the risk, I think, of that happening. But then you rely on a court system. You rely on the legal profession and judges to police that. A good example is abusive regimes have used it. Israel has used lawfare to go after opponents in Europe and here in the United States. You see that. And we've seen lawfare recently. I would say that, what was that congressman from Pennsylvania? The funny hair. He was, this was criminal.
Trafficante.
James Trafficante. Yeah. He was targeted, selectively prosecuted. You can kind of use that as an example. He was a critic of Israel and he was targeted. There was more recently, we have Alex Jones with the Sandy Hook lawsuit using lawfare to go after him. There's, of course, more recently, there's Douglas Mackey, aka Ricky Vaughn, who sent out a joke meme on Twitter about voting with Twitter or voting online or something. And he was prosecuted by the Biden administration. I think he spent 6 months in jail, criminally prosecuted. So there's civil lawfare, there's criminal lawfare. Criminal lawfare is worse in a way because you're putting someone in jail, which is worse. We've had the examples of Letitia James going after VDARE, obviously just using the legal process to overwhelm them with legal costs to shut them down. She never even articulated what offense they committed, but they overwhelmed their operations with subpoenas, and it would cost $1 million to comply, and they don't have the budget for it. I think the Gateway Pundit apparently is declaring bankruptcy because of a lawsuit in Georgia regarding some of their reporting. Again, they're expanding this area to shut down dissident or opinions that aren't supported by the regime. And of course, your ability to cope with lawfare depends on the amount of money you have. If you have a legal
Right.
staff, like the ADL could cope with lawfare. If someone were to sue the ADL, there's no shortage of lawyers that can deal with this stuff. But if you're like a small outfit, like something that the internet supports because it's asymmetrical warfare with a very small budget with a laptop and two hands that can type, you can send a lot of information with your research. But if someone hits you with a lawsuit, they can shut you down. So it's abuse of the law system, of the legal system. Again, it would depend on the merits of each case. But you would think if you had a judiciary made up of serious men on the bench, you think a serious country could do that, that they could police this stuff, and there should be penalties. Like a good example happened with the folks in Charlottesville, the Unite the Right rally, where they got the permit to protest. Ostensibly, it was to protest the taking down of Confederate statues. Then there's Unite the Right rally. It was all permitted, set up with the city of Charlottesville. And the city of Charlottesville conspired to let the counter-protesters come in and disrupt it, and a riot ensued. Aided and abetted by the local police and the local government. That was the conclusion of the Heffey report. But then Roberta Kaplan, who is a lawfare expert, she is a litigator who gets money from various Jewish donors to go after people with no money and sue them into oblivion. And then you have the local government, who was a Soros installed prosecutor, came in, seceded the last one, and brought criminal charges against some of the protesters or the participants of the Unite the Right rally, only the people that had the permit, citing some anti-Ku Klux Klan law, 1871, about burning crosses because they had a tiki, which is completely constitutional legal. But then there's no one policing this. And some people have been prosecuted because can't afford to defend themselves. They're arrested, they go to jail. Obviously, one of the most famous, what we're seeing with Donald Trump, and there's four cases now of lawfare, both civil and criminal. So there's no one policing this or trying to achieve. I think Biden came out and made a joke about Trump not being able to campaign because he's bogged down in court. He should not be joking about that, because he's admitting that that's part of the reasons why he's being prosecuted to derail his campaign. So you have the sitting president, his administration, bringing specious case against his opponent, and he's making a joke about it. And it is a breakdown of the legal system. Legal system will lose legitimacy in the eyes of the public as they do this. And this seems to have picked up steam in the past few years, particularly under the Biden administration.
Oh yeah, no, it's expanding dramatically. The right approach against it is, you just need to have tens of thousands new podcasts emerge. And I would encourage anyone who hears us and has a clear mind to start your own podcast, because we will have a freedom of speech for a while longer, but we already do not have freedom of reach, because like with the Google algorithms, if you're on the wrong side of the dominant paradigm, you're just going to be restrained. You need to have thousands of podcasts. And moreover, if you have that, which already does exist, but I'm talking about we need 100 times this, then the lawfare is less effective. If it's only one or two powerful voices, they can control that easily. But if it's 100,000 small voices, that's just going to be impossible.
Well, yeah, because you can't prosecute and sue everybody.
Right.
And this is why the internet presented a problem to them, say about 20, 15 years ago, when it really started to pick up with the podcast programming, is that freedom of reach became a reality. Meaning in the past, the regime, if you will, both left and right, controlled sides actually, could give lip service to the First Amendment because only a few people had enough money to control newspapers, radio stations, and TV, right? So you can say, yeah, we believe in freedom of speech, but go ahead, print your pamphlets, see how far you get. Maybe you're in ham radio or something, right?
Yeah.
Ah, boy, the podcast and the internet and YouTube. Remember YouTube for about 10 years? Geez, it was like wild, wild west. And they just started to lose control of the narrative. And you have the situation where you have probably, if you talk about the regime's global propaganda budget, we'll probably somewhere in the trillions, right? I'm talking media, Hollywood, everything, you know.
Absolutely. It would literally be in the trillions of dollars.
You capitalize, say, dissident voices. That's probably, at the time, probably hundreds of millions of dollars. Yet it was destroying the narrative. Yeah. Their narrative. Asymmetrical warfare. And yeah. What they do, the ADL comes in and starts talking about hate speech, crime, hate online. They start talking about deplatforming. Lawfare sets in. You have these organizations working behind the scenes to get people fired. This is tortious interference, another violation of the law. You can't do that. You're, at the very least, you're subject to civil penalties for that. You can be sued. So if you had a court system dedicated to protecting people's rights to speak, they'd go after groups like the ADL for this. It's a criminal operation anyway. Everyone knows that. It's been caught spying, paying for stolen property, breaking in, getting files on people, conducting illegal surveillance and these things. For the protection of criminals, anywhere from Leo Frank to Meyer Lansky to Mo Dalitz, even today's Jewish criminals that run the show now, they'd be hit with a RICO lawsuit. This is racketeering. ADL is a racketeering operation. All these Jewish efforts are racketeering to violate people's First Amendment. And the only thing America has, America, whatever it is, what we had was the First Amendment, our freedom of speech.
Right.
You know, and so, but again, they could play lip service when the average Joe had no soapbox, meaning he didn't own a radio station or a newspaper or a network. So whatever he said didn't matter, but all of a sudden started to matter because there's a cumulative effect. But now these alphas like the ADL, American Jewish Committee, ACLU, Alan Dershowitz, the 100 lawyers that he's saying they should get together and sue, they are organizing to violate the First Amendment, which is what America is. So they are un-American. And what they should do, if we had a sovereign Congress that wasn't bought and paid for by the AIPAC and the Israeli lobby, the Jewish lobby, there'd be an investigations. There'd be something like the Reese Committee hearings of the 1950s, looking into the activities of these organizations, many of which are tax exempt. They're official charities. They're the ones that fund Roberta Kaplan's outfit to go out and harass people for simply having a political view and having the audacity to think they can speak up and make a difference in their society. And she says they're Nazis because they disagree with her. Who is, by the way, a self-described fat Jewish kike. I'm sorry, fat lesbian kike. That's how she describes herself. Now, she can describe herself that way. That's okay. I call that, I'm an anti-Semite. I'm just quoting her. But that's her temperament. And she's a radical activist, and she's no business having a law degree. I mean, let me borrow an example. There was a line in Better Call Saul, the TV show, where his older brother, who's a serious lawyer, says, you know, younger brother who's unscrupulous, is like, you having a law degree is like giving a machine gun to a chimpanzee. You know, and that's what it's like with these people. They have no regard for the law or fair play. And there's nothing with a legal system. It works. You can have the law. The law on the books can be fine. All the technicalities, they all can put in fine. But if the people charged for operating within that system and the people overseeing that system are acting in bad faith, the system doesn't work on both ends. You need good faith. And by definition, these Jewish activists, Alan Dershowitz admits it, they're acting in bad faith and they're incompatible with the system. They're un-American. And they should not be allowed to have these privileges and powers within our system. They need to be excluded based on their own rhetoric. They need to be excluded because they cannot be trusted.
Yeah, of course. the fact is that they have always understood that if they had political power, then they would be the ones to define what the words mean. Okay. So that's
they're Bolsheviks.
Yeah, exactly right. And the Bolsheviks are, you know, the Molly Ball of, you know, woke consciousness Americans. The terms that describe the organizations are really unimportant. It's the technique that the organization uses that needs to be understood. And the technique is always the same, and it's around the globe. And they focus on the political power. They find a way to obtain it. They create lifetime actors, you know, people who are give a false ethnic representation, and then they also enslave people through various means, you know, blackmail and whatnot, to create a slave class, their slave class, running the political world, And so now when you have someone like Dershowitz saying, I'm going to go after people if I don't like what they say about Jews, and I'm going to destroy them and I'm going to use the law. And then at the same time, the poor guy who owns the franchise who can't even exclude people who have done violent crimes. Well, it's because they are defining the words, right? Mm-hmm. The definition of the word is just part of their power. And so, you know, I hate to say it, Tim, but at this point, we really can't take the legal system seriously because we have a political class that is malevolent. Mm-hmm. They are just flat out malevolent at the control level. You know, you look at Johnson, his advocation of, the genocide funding program, you know, the spending bill. When he was trying to run for the Speaker of the House, he was saying, well, you know, America's first, border, blah, blah, blah. He was just lying his head off, mm-hmm. takes the office. And the next thing you know, well, they get the money out. The borders are wide open in the United States. The money's going in, which we don't have. You know, the federal deficit is just completely insane. But nevertheless, he has been put in power somehow, you see. And I would say that he is a product of this approach, the Judeo-Masonic approach to how to get what they want is to find the leverage point, the fulcrum of political power, and then just use that against the population. So you're getting an attack against you, against the public, which they don't understand, because they don't recognize that the political system has been taken over by lifetime actors, by enslaved, people who are being blackmailed. And ultimately, they're just reflecting the Judeo-Masonic oligarchic view of the world, which is Deuteronomic, you know, which is these ethnicities need to be our slaves or off the planet. And so you get these insane situations like, Gaza and the Ukraine, and the public just sits there in wonderment. Why do we somehow always have, you know, a situation where, it's just these catastrophe after another? Well, they got to recognize who's running the show. You see, if they understand that, then, the world at least makes sense.
Yeah. Like I said, lawfare, I think that what we're this lawfare has become a very common leftist tactic, but it's also a symptom or a product of the tribalization of American society as it becomes more diverse, and there's a reason for that. And so we can't. We have to. What was our legal system? And the legal system is a product of custom, common experience, and history of the Europeans, particularly Anglo-Saxon law system that we inherited and developed in the United States. So it's basically, it was a product of a particular group of people, ethnic group that founded the country, pioneered it, created it. As the legal systems become more diverse, it's become more tribal and it's beginning to break down. And we've had since the 1960s an effort to increase minority influence on the American legal system. And it's progressively broken down because of it. And that you can't ignore, obviously one, you see a correlation there. English common law was derived from Northern European folk, and it functioned adequately in the United States as long as it was, upholded. And obviously there were problems, there was corruption, but it generally worked. Now we see this obvious breakdown because it's being done to wage tribal. Well, one thing is partisan, but then also tribal ethnic warfare. We said with Trump and with the National Rifle Association, Letitia James, these things. You come to realize that it is the legal system itself is a product of a particular culture, and we can't take it for granted. And we, as you mentioned earlier in the conversation today, is the promotion of ethnic minority rights without the simultaneous demand for maintaining certain standards is a recipe for disaster. Because those minority groups are going to see themselves as getting theirs. It's a chance for them for retribution, or they look at the current society level of development and prosperity. They think it's just a matter of picking the fruit off the trees, as opposed to developing the land, cultivating it, developing it, accumulating capital, the workaday effort. They don't see that, and they're not told to see that because they're told all their problems are a product of racism, the whitey, And that's been the the indoctrination since the civil rights movements for the past, 60 years.
That's so important, Tim. Do you see the point just comes right out of what you're saying there, that you can have racism as an explanation for, bad outcomes, mm-hmm. or you can have a meritocracy, but you can't have both.
No.
And when they take away the concept of a meritocracy from like the minorities who are supposedly, trying to have a better outcome, it's just self-defeating. It's always good, because without the desire to improve, the idea of like participating in meritocracy, you're never going to have the discipline, to like make intellectual advances and to make economic advances on your own. You're just going to be in the world of fantasy, of racism, of it's all racism. We will get ours just by having the political power and by having the taps turned on so we can use the money from the governments in our own way for our own swag. We can have fancy cars. I mean, Letitia James, it's just, I would say for an honest black intellectual looking at that whole situation, it'd just be horrifying.
I think she's a multimillionaire. How did that happen?
Yeah. Well, and you can see that nihilism, and no improvement in, kind of the skill set needed to be powerful in this world. I mean, it can only take you so far, Tim.
Well, you get South Africa. You get
only exactly
Mississippi. You get Detroit. You get Baltimore.
As long as the wealth that had been created by the white culture was intact, they could keep their political class at a corrupt level. But now that it's disappearing, you're just going to descend into the fentanyl brigade and homelessness, homeless encampments. And then this is why wherever you see the application of, the affirmative action self-esteem program applied most intensely, that is where you will find the most collapse of society. Yeah. They always go exactly hand in hand. That's why when you look at the history of, the affirmative action programs in Philadelphia, now, where has it taken, the African-American community? You've got a ruling class, the political class, the blacks are just doing great. But just look at the videos of the street life and you can see where it's taken us.
In terms of lawfare, though, you see, like, good example, in these Trump cases, the judges are either Jewish or people of color.
Yeah.
Meaning they're very tribal people. And Jews are very tribal. And they've always corrupted the law for their purposes. And, Louis Brandeis was a Zionist and he used his position in the Wilson administration and within the U.S. government to promote Zionism primarily. Same with his protege, Felix Frankfurter, so that suspicion was well-founded. He was like, the first Jew put in the Supreme Court, broke that bigotry, that barrier. So, well, apparently that barrier was justified because right. he used his position as the Supreme Court Justice to get the country into the war, First World War, and promote Zionism. Well, gee, Jewish interest. He was a member of a secret society called the Purushim, a secret society. Secret oaths, if you're a judge, you can't have secret oaths. Of course, they do. That's the problem, whether it's Freemasonry or Jewish outfits, which is intermingled. But anyway, we see a lot of these things. It's kind of entertaining. You do that Senator Kennedy from, I think it's from Louisiana. Kind of got that Southern drawl. Is that old style conservative Republican? Back in the day, he would have been a Democrat. Now he's a Republican. But he had that drawl. But his questioning and some of the judicial appointees of basic law questions, and they can't answer. And they're all black, or either they're black or they're women, and they don't know anything about basic law, or at least what you think a law professor or a judge would know. That's their expertise. They have PhDs in these things, supposedly. They can't answer basic questions, like what part of the Constitution covers the Congress or the president or the executive branch.
This is a perfect example. The meritocracy principle is gone. They were promoted out of self-esteem.
They're tribal, tribal agents and commissars, not judges. So we can laugh at, Justice Ketanji Brown claiming not knowing what a woman is because she's not a biologist, or her saying that the First Amendment really doesn't matter, it shouldn't matter. You have Sonia Sotomayor, another, mediocre mind who I think didn't know what was a de facto law she couldn't define.
Yeah,
Didn't appear to understand the term. And so, but, and we can laugh at that, but then these are the people who get appointed to judiciary who then sit on some of these lawfare cases that bankrupt dissident voices and ultimately shut down the ability to people to actually participate in the political process, influence their culture, and have a say in things above and beyond casting a ballot every 2, 4, 6 years, which doesn't mean anything because of it's all fraud anyway. See, this is the things that really matter. So they're everyone can vote, but you can't really participate in the terms that matter, like having an impact on public opinion and influence in debate, or even be able to debate these things. You're going to debate, create a very narrow window what you can discuss. Like you can't criticize Israel. Like Governor Abbott, when he says that they're guilty of anti-Semitism, that's not your concern. They have a right to be anti-Semitic if they want to be. Are they violent? Are they breaking any laws? That's the issue. Shouldn't they?
Also, what about the idea of why asking the question, why are they anti-Semitic? I mean, do they have a rationale for it?
Yeah, what does that term mean?
Is it a coherent position? Does it connect into the real world?
Yeah.
I mean, he's using the expression as kind of a just a magic wand of intimidation, And
I think the death toll in Palestine is well north of 40,000. And he's wondering why some people are unhappy with Jews.
Right.
Who advocate for Israel. Then when you accuse them of being agents of Israel, that's an anti-Semitic trope. But then if you criticize Israel, they get offended. Wait a second. You're an American.
Right.
Why are you so concerned about Israel? Oh, you're Jewish. So, okay, then there's a connection. Now let's begin to talk about these things, but you can't talk to them because they have relatives who died in the Holocaust, right?
Yeah. So you can see the absolute need for the independent media to grow. I mean, it's the only alternative, the only counterweight to any of this that's going to keep.
But how can it grow with lawfare when that's going to scare away investors and people participate? This is a chilling effect.
Well, and that's why they're doing this to Trump. It's just these are show trials to to show the white male that you're no longer in a situation where the law will work for you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, sort of like the last presidential election was to give the impression that elections are no longer something you should have any sense of having power within. And then the protest, when you protest against the elections being rigged, well, then you're set to prison.
Well, right? You saw that down in Arizona, latest Arizona Attorney General indicted, was it 11? She calls them fake electors. They're called alternative electors.
Right.
Of a criminal lawfare. Same thing occurred in Michigan. Now, you listen to what she's saying. Is she's saying this was a false claim about election fraud? That's debatable. Anyone can make false. It's not illegal to make a false claim about election fraud or to believe there was election fraud. And believe me, there's less evidence to suspect election fraud in 2020 because of the mail-in ballots. Okay, and the anomalies of last-minute voting coming in 90-10 for Biden. These, regardless of that, it's not illegal to suspect election fraud. If that were true, then everyone and all the Democrats in 2016 would still be sitting in prison. The point is because when they claim Trump was illegitimate for the same reason. But she says that he calls them fake electors. No, when there is election in dispute, as there was in 2020 in Arizona and in Pennsylvania and in Michigan and Georgia and a couple other states because of the results, it's common for the other party to create a slate of alternative electors. Should that get resolved in the courts or whatever processes, then you have the electors who go to electoral college to have your state represented. This has happened. I think this happened in 1960 in Hawaii. When it first went to Hood Nixon, then they checked into it, went to Kennedy. There were two slate of electors chosen. It wasn't fake election. It wasn't criminal. They're claiming it's criminal to claim that it was a fake election and to set up electors to go. And they're at the very time they're claiming this stuff, there were people moving to litigate these things in court. Now the courts rejected them without looking at the evidence, and they're saying, well, the courts found there's no case, no evidence for it. They didn't look at the evidence. They didn't hear the case.
The court said they didn't have the standing to judge.
Didn't stand the judge. I said, wait a second, that's circular logic here. But they're trying to criminalize the completely legitimate process of choosing alternative electors when there is an election dispute, just like when they claim on January 6th, the day that the electoral college was going to be certified. They're saying, well, you're going to try to overturn an election. No, the protesters were claiming that the election was overturned with the fraud. And they were claiming that they actually won, and the purpose for the ostensible purpose for the protest on January 6th was to provide a protest to give the politicians the backbone on Capitol Hill to reject the electors and challenge the election. That was the purpose of the protest. That was
correct.
That
it was a normal constitutional process.
Yeah, stop the steal was like, now you can say that stop the steal was a fraud. All that, the point is they were challenging. The whole point of having a certification process implies that it may not be certified, right? Then why have, if it's just rubber stamp, then why even go through the certification process? Certification means truth. If there's a, if there's reason to suspect what's the electors being chosen are spoiled, and by the way, objectively they were, because many of these electors were chosen based on the election laws that were illegally changed by the governors under the cover of COVID. The mail-in ballots were never legal. The state's attorney, the state's not attorney general, the state secretaries of states and governors made that change without legislative action. Legislatures have the plenary authority to determine the manner in which electors are chosen. That's a function of the legislatures. So when you had Pennsylvania do that, and you had Michigan do that, it was illegal. The courts just simply refused to hear that argument. Objectively, though, no, the way the law is, those the way that those electors were chosen was illegal based on the law, but they just didn't hear it. Point being is, okay, all that was ignored for politics, that happens. But then to go back and try to criminally prosecute these people for simply playing by the rules, really, it's atrocious. And that attorney general in Pennsylvania and Dana Nessel in Michigan for doing the same thing, they should be impeached. And they should be charged criminally for abuse of power, for trying to destroy these people's lives, for acting, they're simply acting legitimately in the interest of their political party. And I made the case in November 2020. If the Republican Party really thought that the election was fraudulent, I think it was, but if the Republican Party wanted to challenge it, they didn't want to challenge it. They had the institutional power to change, because in all the states where there was a dispute, Republicans controlled the legislature. And they simply could have just chosen their own electors, and that would have been completely legal.
Absolutely.
Regardless of what you think of Trump being orange and being bad.
At the time it was going on, when Trump was going to make the decision and we were wondering what Pence was going to do, we had shows where we pointed out that that if Trump believed what he was claiming, it wasn't just something that was an option that was legal. It was a requirement. He took an oath to defend the Constitution.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
The idea of free elections. Now,
Trump undermined his own case. You're right.
Exactly. But so he should have said, I don't want to do this. I know it's going to, some people will be enraged, but I have no choice. I know I have evidence to believe. I have enough evidence that I cannot in good conscience accept the certification of the elections as they came forward.
Yeah.
I am going to insist that that it is turned over to the next process, which is more visible. No, mail-in ballots in the state legislations, they're all going, it's going to be above board. America will get a president elected in this way. And that's what he needed to do if he actually believed what he claimed.
Yeah. Or he could have just said any state's mail-in ballots, their electors are illegitimate. And then go send it to the legislatures.
He had two different choices, but
yeah. By the way, that's sending it to the legislature. This is how the system is supposed to work. We don't really have national elections; we have state elections for president. The states select the president, and the legislatures decide in most states now that you have a at-large voting to decide these things. But they can turn around and point the electors, change that law, which I would actually support. Because we were spared presidential campaigns, and actually we'd probably be a much better process. But we live in a mass democratic age, because mass democracy is very easy to manipulate by the oligarchs. Because as we found out with Twittergate files, is the FBI colluding with the media companies to control the flow of information to affect the outcome of the election, which is also illegitimate. That's racketeering and collusion. Yeah.
And the next logical step is they control the information concerning the numbers of ballots counted.
Exactly. And by the way, this is not an endorsement of Trump, the man, or his presidency, or his politics. He's kind of a buffoon, doesn't know what to say in these things. And I don't know.
No, he's just a symbolic representation.
Yes,
of the
but he was. He wasn't an incarnation. Right. So, exactly.
But the optics are atrocious.
But to turn around and try to criminally prosecute people for challenging election results, of which there is much evidence.
Well, all that does, what they're attacking there, is not Trump, but the First Amendment.
Yes.
You know.
So now we can never challenge election results, despite how messy they are.
So
you're going to tell me I have to accept the fact that polling places in Philadelphia and Chicago and Detroit, there's no fraud?
Yeah, of course.
Or Atlanta, for that matter? Are you kidding me?
And it's just going to get worse and worse because now that, you know, they've got the mail-in ballots is basically, you know, a standard. They can just create computer algorithms to put, they'll just see what the rest of the state is doing and then come up with a magic number to make sure that the state casts its electoral, you know, ballots to whatever presidential candidate that they want.
Yeah.
It's literally a dictatorship. Under the guise of, this kind of democracy,
they'll say you're undermining democracy. So where's that in the law? What law?
Right.
What criminal code says I can't undermine democracy? What does that mean? I mean, it's like
I mean, particularly when the democracy is illegitimate. Yeah. I mean,
they're called alternative electors. By the way, they had them in 2000 with Bush v. Gore. They talked in 2016. There were congressmen, Congress critters who gave speeches rejecting the electors for Trump, calling it fraudulent. Nothing happened. Were they overturning democracy?
Yeah.
No. So, anyways, that's another function of that lawfare. You're using the criminal law to go after political opponents. So.
Yeah, and we just have to hope that diminishing returns is setting in, and that enough people are aware and can help spread the word that when they continue with these processes, because they have no choice, they have to go forward. Otherwise, we will rise up against them. When they do things like this, for example, who knows, when they prevent Trump from running for president or something like this, that it just creates more resistance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what the real hope is that in the golden age of the internet, when YouTube was free, when the Google algorithms gave you what was, you know, most interesting to most people. And that there was enough freedom created in that one brief little period,
mm-hmm.
that now there will just be a proliferation of independent-minded podcasts that just goes on and on. And every time they do something this draconian, this evil, it just produces more resistance. You see, this is what I'm hoping that is the process we're in now. I really do believe it is kind of looking that way. And particularly, like, you know, I would just point out, like, the vaccine mandates were a good example of this. They pushed, they tried, but at the end of the day, they now have ended up with not just a resistance against any more boosters, but all vaccines are dramatically less used now because of what they tried to do to us.
Well, apparently, no one ever supported vaccine mandates, nor no one ever did support the lockdown, even though it.
Right. I know. Who knew it was going on even? Yeah. So anyway, so this is just where we are. We have to constantly push for more podcasts to be created, more clear-minded people to try to get their information out. It doesn't matter if you're getting it out to like 100 people. Get it out. Get the information out. Try to constantly create more and more of these sources, alternative sources of information, because that it can't really be crushed with a few, lawsuits against the leaders of this movement, and we will eventually start to have to show that there's diminishing returns to everything that they do. We will be scrutinizing them as much as they're scrutinizing us, and in that world, we'll always win because hey. They lie, and we actually have the truth on our side, and so they have the bigger task ahead than us, you know.
Yeah, you end up being like one of the clowns on MSNBC, citing that Trump was found, he was found to be a sexual predator. Well,
it's just unbelievable listening.
But look at the judge of the court. Look at the court. I mean, he's convicted here. Well, yeah, but look at the clown judges and look at the juries. I mean, come on.
Well, they'll even bring Letitia James on, or Fannie Wills. They won't bring Fannie on anymore because she's been, you know, marked.
Yeah.
But they'll bring a Bragg on or Letitia, and they'll actually, or even worse, they'll bring on some talking head.
Well, didn't they bring in some guy? There's some guy in the Biden administration who took he was demoted to prosecute this case up in New York because Alec Bragg can't do it.
Right. So, well, that's the thing that they're obviously these are not like brain trust people because they wouldn't be in that position if they were. But, you know, so they're easy to, you know, if it's an open playing field, they can be debunked, but it's not. It's just you know, the and remember, they're not really trying to keep Trump in prison. What they're trying to do is create a propaganda meme to intimidate you know, the Europeans. So it just the fact that the process exists kind of wins. They kind of have a win because,
well, I think the more significant is like the cases against the National Rifle Association or VDARE has probably more impact.
Yeah,
high profile thing on Trump, because it's basically going after these little people, and it's such a cynical abuse of the legal system. That the fact that there's no penalty for this obvious abuse, whether you're an attorney general of a state, a prosecutor, or just a litigating attorney, the fact that you can go in and use the court system to terrorize people you don't like, people's opinions, you're guilty of no crime, of assaulting nobody. Charlottesville is a great example of that. That's really bad. That just shows just how out of control the legal system is. And again, loses legitimacy. At that point, people are going to seek justice elsewhere. You know?
Yeah, I know. It's sad because, you know, because what we're really talking about is vigilantism, which is sort of a kind of a vague term, but I do think people will need to have you set up their own kind of an alternative way to find peace and justice in this world, because it looks to me like they, you know, what happened to the Google algorithm is going to happen to, you know, all of the federal courts.
Yes. And you see it with the rhetoric. There's sort of an algorithm in the rhetoric where they talk about like the insurrection, right? Insurrection is injected in.
Yeah,
it was like, but it wasn't an insurrection, but they use it to prosecute people. But even though that's not even in the charge, they use it to set to create a narrative to justify the prosecution, even though there's no basis of any fact on that.
Exactly. So it's going to be, you know, mind control versus the, independent podcasts.
So, okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Thank you so much, brother.
We'll take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.